you're here. Fellowship, sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you.
Hi, listening friend. Thanks for tuning in for the Tuesday edition of Mark and Friends. It's October 2nd, 2012. Lord willing, there will be no technical difficulties during this morning's edition of Mark and Friends. And the technical difficulties experienced yesterday were all my fault. So sorry for those of you that got a little bit discombobulated with your schedule, driving to work thinking, wait a minute, I'm hearing last week's program, and then I'm hearing some instrumental music, and then Mark came on again. Well, we have that all resolved, and today you'll hear part two of a special program provided by the Moody Broadcasting Network. In fact, it's a 55-minute theater of the mind hosted by Chris Fabry that I've broken into three parts. So I played a portion yesterday. I'll backtrack a little of the story today and air part two, and then tomorrow I'll broadcast the remaining about 18 or 19 minutes. But the storyline on this book printed by Moody Publishing that's entitled Inciting Incidents share stories of real people in what they're calling theater of the mind experiences, guiding you through several life-altering moments that many of us come to see as unexpected turns or necessary ingredients for deeper peace and enormous growth that'll draw us closer to God instead of pushing Him away. And so if you were tuned in yesterday, you heard a few examples of those specific moments that they call inciting incidents, where they came to a fork in a road and had to make a decision whether they would follow God, follow their own self-centered tendencies, or continue just in the rut of the life experience that they were going through. As written on the back cover of this book, Inciting Incidents, God created us uniquely, and we each have a part to play in His story. And I once heard somebody say, history is really His story. What's also interesting about the timing of this book, as I mentioned yesterday, this past Saturday, the Singing Men of GNN sang at the Taylorville Correctional Center before about 150 inmates, and it was a life-changing, life-altering, inciting incident for many of the men, as God worked in our hearts, worked in and through us, and stretched and taught us a whole lot about Him. My prayer for you today is that as you identify with some of this narrative, the story that's going to be shared, you will find points of application for your life, and God will turn today's program or the experience that you're having as your turning point, your fork in the road, your inciting incident. As mentioned, I'll backtrack a little, and we'll pick up with Tracy's story. Also remember, this program is archived at greatnewsradio.org, along with yesterday's broadcast and tomorrow, Part 3. I'll also mention now at the end of today's broadcast, there will be a call-in for a copy of Inciting Incidents during the morning edition of Mark and Friends, and also at that same point in the program when it re-airs in the evening. So stay with us for the next 20 or so minutes.
I think inciting incidences don't change where life comes from. Like, we can either still choose God in the midst of that, or we don't. And we can still have that fork in the road of saying, you know what, I'm going to take control of my own life. I'm going to self-medicate. I'm going to choose what I think is still life-giving. Or we can choose God and saying, you know what, I caught a glimpse of redemption. I caught a glimpse of forgiveness. And I caught a glimpse of what life could be like and how different it is. And I mean, God is all heart. Like, He is in our heart. He changes our heart. And that matters. That is where the healing happens. And so I had a decision to make. I had a fork in the road and had to decide, which life am I going to go down? Which road am I going to choose?
A fork in the road will do that, force you to choose. And not choosing is a choice as well. If you disregard the fork, you've made a choice. But let's go back to David at the expert conference, who was laid low by this concept of being an authority rather than an expert. He got together with some friends that night at the hotel and decided he would be cagey with his expertise and have some fun. But the results were disastrous in one way. In another, it was the catalyst that led him on an odyssey of discovery.
One of the first things they asked was, what are you an expert in? And of course I said, well, I'm a kung fu expert. And apparently one of them there actually was a kung fu expert. And so he went to give me this kind of fake roundhouse kick to the head. And, of course, everybody's kind of laughing now. Now we're kind of playing to the audience a little bit. And so sure enough, he delivered this kind of fake roundhouse kick. And I turned really quickly as though he'd hit me. And I hit my head on this concrete pillar. And I turned around and... everybody was just, oh, you know, everybody knew that that probably hurt pretty bad. And it did. It hurt pretty bad. But I hit myself kind of on the front left portion of my head. And it hurt. It wasn't too bad, though. But I turned around and was just, you know, going to kind of play it off. But when I did, nothing would come out of my mouth. I couldn't speak, and it was really bizarre. Like, I've never actually had that, and the medical term for it is called aphasia. My brain was working, and I'm like, tell him your name. Your name is David. Tell him your company. Your company is Dot and Cross. Tell him this, and nothing would come out of my mouth. It was a very, very bizarre feeling, and I've never been short on words, so I literally didn't know what to do, and I would literally kind of try and push words out of my mouth, and the only word that would come out was this... almost like a child trying to say the word concrete. Like that was the only word I could get out of my mouth. And they were all being very nice. Like, it's okay. Take your time. You just hit your head. You know, people are like, well, maybe he has a concussion and all this stuff. And I was just so embarrassed. I wanted to get out of there as quickly as I could. And eventually I kind of came around to where I could kind of mumble a few phrases. And I was like, I need to go to bed. Like, I need to get out of here. And I was really just embarrassed at the fact that I couldn't talk and I didn't know what was happening. And I'd also noticed a numbness down the right side of my body that was very bizarre. So this is new territory for me. I've never experienced any of these feelings before, and I just wanted to get out of there. So I went up and went to bed, and when I woke up in the morning, I felt fine for the most part. I had a little bit of a headache, but when I went to take a shower that morning, when I was in the shower, I realized I couldn't talk again. The same feeling was coming back. I can't talk. I had a really strong metallic taste in my mouth, and it was overwhelming. I just kept spitting this metallic taste out of my mouth, and that numbing feeling on the right side of my body came back. And I was just, again, I was just kind of blown away at what was happening to me. And sure enough, a couple minutes later, it kind of passed, and I was like, okay, I'm all right. I'm all right. Like, moving on. Like, let's go downstairs. Let's pretend this never happened. Let's press on. And so I went down. It was the final day of the conference. And it was about 9 o'clock in the morning, and I sat down, and I don't really remember too much other than, you know, welcome, this is the final day. And right at that moment, I had a grand mal seizure. When every muscle on your body tenses up, you know, you typically pass out, you start seizing, your muscles start tensing up, and I was on the ground just shaking for about 5 minutes. Completely out of, you know, completely unconscious. And then I was passed out for about 25 minutes after that. So I was unconscious for about 30 minutes, and woke up when they were loading me into a ambulance headed for Stanford Hospital, and really had no idea what had just happened. When I first got to the hospital, they thought that I had some internal bleeding from hitting my head on this concrete pillar. And so they ran some MRIs, they ran some PET scans. They kind of wanted to just do an overview of my body. And I'm joking around, you know, I'm feeling fine at this point in time. And when they came back to me, they said, David, you don't have bleeding on the brain, but you actually have a very large cancerous tumor in your head. And this just, of course, I was in shock. They said, yeah, he started showing me the MRIs and showing me that there's this large mass. And I don't think they said cancerous at first, but you have a large mass in your head that we need to do a biopsy on. And so they ended up, I transferred from Stanford over to Mayo in Minnesota, and they did a biopsy there and learned that I have a grade 2 oligoastrocytoma, which is a glioma in the brain. And it's not a little tumor that you can, a lot of people go in and they'll remove this little piece of tumor. Mine is actually like tree branches. And so these tree branches actually move throughout my brain and goes through my Wernicke's and my Broca's section of the brain, which is your speech comprehension and operation portions of your brain. And it's also right next to my right motor cortex. So when I hit my head, what I essentially did was, you know, I caused some swelling, but it was right on the outside of where this tumor was living that I had no idea was there. And it caused this little bit of swelling, which caused the tumor to move, which then affected my right motor cortex and then affected my ability to speak and to understand. And so right then, I essentially set off this tumor. I essentially pushed, I don't know how you say it, I realized for the first time that something was there. And they said that this, based on the calcium that was in my brain, it had probably been growing in my brain for about 10 years, which was just so bizarre for me to hear that for the past 10 years I've had cancer in my brain and never knew it until this moment at this conference, right when my life had kind of been turned upside down by some of the information I was hearing. And all of a sudden, I went from the guy angry at God because I've never been given this, any type of story that was worth listening to now being the guy who has his brain, 25% of his brain is covered in a cancerous tumor that they say will allow me only 5 to 7 years left to live.
A bump on the head leads to a diagnosis. The inciting incident forces David to make some tough decisions about life, about faith. But others reach this crisis point through different means, from differing paths, like I-90 near Chicago. A young man is driving to another show. He's an actor on the cusp of something big. Already successful in his stage career, the future looks bright and promising. And it's not a tumor or a divorce or an accident that changes it. It's as simple as a thought that crosses his mind. This is where we'll pick up the story of Blaine Hogan.
All my life, since I was 18, really since I finished high school, all I wanted to do was be an actor. I went to a couple different theater schools, ended up here in Chicago, was in New York for a while, came back to Chicago, and really was taking off. Had a great agent, was working at a lot of theaters, Marriott Chicago Shakespeare, working at the Goodman, and it looked like everything was kind of up and to the right. Meanwhile, had the classic story of just had a lot of issues, kind of junk going on, stuff from my childhood that was really making itself known, really becoming much more present. And I remember a day, it must have been October, driving down 90, and a beautiful October day, heading downtown to do a show, and just had this sense of, like, is this it? Is this everything? Is this what I should be doing? And it wasn't like a kind of, I don't want to be part of the entertainment industry. There was this gnawing feeling that I needed to maybe finally come to terms with some of the issues that I was dealing with. And it was that moment that I was given a really pretty clear example of, like, I could keep doing this one thing, but if these issues were went unaddressed, I was going to implode or I was going to explode. So from that moment, I spun out of control, ended up in the emergency room with really severe anxiety and panic attacks. And this is what happens, and it's what I've dubbed my inciting incident. It's a moment in a character's life that radically upsets it. And just me thinking, is there more, was for me the inciting incident that really upset everything. And from there, everything changed. I think that I had been lucky enough to taste a bit of real success, what I really had hoped for. And I think I was left wanting more. Well, this didn't do what I thought it was gonna do. And it's so cliche, and I wish it weren't so, but stories are all the same. You realize that something is missing and nothing can quite fill it. And I mean, as cliche as it was, that's what was happening. I grew up Catholic, and so I'd always been exposed to spirituality in a number of different facets. specifically the Catholic faith. But I was the kid that sort of all my high school friends took me to their youth groups. So I went to like Lutheran Bible camp. I went to Assemblies of God youth groups. I went to Billy Graham crusades. And I was always the kid who raised my hand. So I was like an altar call junkie, and the high always wore off. And so I'd always maintained what I called a Christian faith, but I wouldn't say I was living it out. I think that I always felt the presence of God, especially in those really dark moments. But I couldn't have claimed that I was living much of a Christian walk at that point.
The thought that crossed Blaine's mind didn't just appear without a reason. It was from seeds sown many years before in his life.
The summer of my 10th year, I was sexually abused by a couple of older guys in my neighborhood. And in the story I write that it began to build a storm that didn't quite break until the moment on 90, 10 or so years later, that October. And since then, I've been sort of dealing with that storm. I think for a long time I had this idea of God as someone that I could participate with whenever I wanted to. So I had this picture in my mind that I would say, God, thanks so much for being with me today, but I'm now going to do something you probably shouldn't see. And I would like literally have in my mind that I could shut the door on God. And I'd been doing some study recently and on David. And he wrote Psalm 139, where he's talking about where can I go from your presence? You know, if I go up to the heavens, if I go make my bed in the depths, you are there. Well, some scholars say that he wrote that when he was a kid. And then you look at the rest of his life, his sleeping with Bathsheba and all the things that he did. And it's ironic to think that a guy who wrote those words thought that he could get away with something as dramatic as that. And I think that's sort of how I live my life, is that even though I've been told again and again, God knows you, he's with you in those dark places, he's with you in the beauty, he's with you in the depravity, I had this mind that I could separate it. And so what I was really coming to terms with in the emergency room and curled up in a ball on my floor, you know, dealing with this intense anxiety, was that God was with me in this moment. He was with me in the moments that I said, God, please don't be with me. And what was really difficult was having to wrestle with the idea that God was with me in the moment of my own abuse. And I think that all of those kind of intermingling together, those can take you into some really dark places, and that's where I found myself.
In the book, Inciting Incidents, Blaine Hogan reveals a vision of his life after the inciting incident, after the panic attacks, after he decided to go to school in the Pacific Northwest. Here is what he wrote.
As I sat in a corner annex of the school, trying dreadfully to calm myself down, I penned these words on a battered field notes notebook I'd been keeping in my pocket as I worked through my feelings those first few months. It snowed 13 inches today, and I missed it. Oh, I was there, all right. I saw it snowing, but still, I missed it. God's blanket of white, pure white, gently pressed down the pause button of our busy, busy souls. All he wanted to say was, see, look what I can do. Don't you think it's lovely? Wildly, I flung my hands about, beat my chest, screamed a ton, and then began furiously shoveling off the snow that threatened to depress my heart's little switch. No, no, I do not think it's lovely. No, I say, I will not be stopped. I will not look. I will not see. I have a life to live, and these 13 inches are giving me a panic attack. I do not want to be stuck, stranded, stopped. So please, pack your snow back up and drop it on someone else's heart who might care. Someone who might actually stop and give you praise for interrupting their perfectly busy lives. It snowed today. 13 inches in Seattle. It was beautiful, I'm told.
Well, we do serve an incredible, forgiving God that wants to transform our lives and work in and through the various situations we find ourselves in. Draw near to God, and He'll draw near to you. Well, I hope you're enjoying this broadcast. I've broken this into three parts, and tomorrow will be the conclusion with a few more stories, so be sure to tune in, whether it's at 7:32 a.m., the re-airing at 7:32 p.m., or at our archived programs link at greatnewsradio.org. All right, those of you that stayed with us, right now the third caller at 217-367-7777 will get a copy of Inciting Incidents by Moody Publishing. Call right now, third caller wins, 217-367-7777. For our Indiana listeners, 1-888-333-9466. Hey, by the way, we still have room for you to attend this Saturday's special workshop with Bill Allison, How to Make Jesus' Vision and Mission Your Vision and Mission. Begins at 8:30 to 12:30, we'll break for lunch, and then there'll be a 1 to 2 o'clock open Q&A with Bill Allison. It's being held at the Community Evangelical Free Church in Muhammad, right on Route 47. Call now to make reservations. We still have room. Dial 217-367-7777. We'll have Bill Allison on the air Thursday and Friday, and I know many of you will be convinced after hearing him. This is going to be well worth your time, but call in now so we can make arrangements, have your lunch ready, and the proper resources, the training manual, and the 28-day Disciple Maker Study Journal. Call sometime today so we can make sure we have your reservation in. There is a $20 cost, but trust me, it's going to be well worth it. Co-host Pastor Jason Schiffo and I have been praying for months for this, and Bill is an outstanding teacher and faithful follower of the Lord Jesus Christ. You'll be encouraged by his story, his testimony, his training techniques, his heart to help you grow, and the wisdom and insights that he's going to share. On Monday night, I really challenge many of the singing men to come out because I believe this will be a transformational workshop that will help us all grow closer to Jesus and yet also help those we know walk more faithfully and intentionally in their relationship with God. So come on, everyone, carve out some time. Join us this Saturday between 8:30 and 12:30. Break bread with us during that lunchtime. And then if you can stay for the Q&A from 1 to 2, that would be great. So call up a friend or two. Get your reservations in by dialing 217-367-7777. Allow this workshop to be your special inciting incident where God does a new work in you or brings you to that crossroad where you take a new direction. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you and have a great day and night.